In a career spanning over five decades, John Williams has composed for film, was conductor of the Boston Pops for 14 years, and this year is celebrating his 80th birthday.
A glance at his prolific soundtracks, including all six Star Wars movies, three Harry Potter films, Home Alone, Jurassic Park, Saving Private Ryan, and many, many more, underscores the fact that he is the Academy's most nominated living person with 47 Oscar nominations. He's won five Academy Awards, 21 Grammys, four Golden Globes, and five Emmys.
Not only that, he was born in New York. He moved to Los Angeles to begin a career in the film industry, where he was mentored by legendary film composers Bernard Herrmann, Alfred Newman, and Franz Waxman. His movie collaborations include work with directors such as Alfred Hitchcock, William Wyler, and Robert Altman, but he is perhaps best known for his 35-year partnership with director Steven Spielberg.
Williams continued his Spielberg collaboration this past year with The Adventures of Tintin. In fact, music from Tintin will be performed tonight, as will selections from Close Encounters.
In addition, Tanglewood will celebrate John Williams' 80th birthday, which happened all the way back in February. But we're still celebrating, and it's on Saturday, August 18th, with an amazing program, and it's an absolute pleasure to welcome John Williams to our roundtable. Thank you so much for being with us. An honor, as always, to have you.
Thank you very much. It's an honor for me to be with you. 80 years. Actually, I'm 80 and a half now.
Right. It was only back in February, yes. So it's but a year-long celebration.
Well, it has become that, and it's lovely.
I want to ask you, we just learned moments ago that the Oscar-winning composer, three-time Oscar-winning composer, Marvin Hamlisch, passed away at the age of 68, which was just reported. And I don't know what your working relationship was with him, but what are your thoughts on his career and legacy?
I'm very saddened to hear this news just a moment ago. And I knew that he had been taken ill last week because he was to conduct some recording sessions for the upcoming film about Liberace. Mm. And we heard that he had collapsed and was unable to conduct the session, was taken to Cedars-Sinai Hospital. But I had no idea, I don't think any of us did, that the illness was of such a serious nature. I've known Marvin, I guess, about 30 years, and we never really worked together because so many of the things that we each did, we did separately in similar veins, writing and conducting and so on. But I always liked him very much. He came to the Pops in Boston quite a few times as a guest conductor. And he always used to tease me because he would say that we would go to these Oscar celebrations together and the management would always seat the nominees on the inside row and they would put the unannounced winner on the aisle. And Marvin joked that they were always putting me in the aisle and tease me about our competitions at the Oscars. He was a great, your listeners, many of them will know that he was a fantastically wonderful humorist, really. I don't know if he ever wrote any prose or autobiography. Would have been great fun. It's a great loss to lose Marvin because he was a great entertainer and a captivating musician, really a lovely man with that precious ingredient of wonderful, fresh, and original humor that is so rare.
Switching subjects for one second, you love Tanglewood, don't you?
Very much. First of all, I mean, the physical gift to us of Tanglewood itself is such a treasure, so very beautiful. I think for me, perhaps especially so, because I come from the West Coast where things tend to be arid and dry and it's a different topography and so on. Here, the richness of the whole sylvan atmosphere is something that contrasts with California in a wonderful way. California, beautiful state in a very different way. And the fact that the Boston Symphony, it resides here in the summer and for 75 years has had this festival, there is nothing like to be compared with this in the United States that I know of. A magnificent natural setting and a very high-level institution dedicated to music education and exploration and all of it, that the fact that the BSO, since Koussevitzky's time, has taken that on as its mission, I think separates the orchestra in many ways for me and tells us that Tanglewood is something that is inimitable, although it would be wonderful to have it duplicated elsewhere. I also don't think there's anything at this level of quality in a setting as beautiful anywhere in Europe that I know of. So I think this is probably unique in the world, and yes, it is true that I do love it.
And Mark said that Volpi said he sometimes sees you walking around after you've done your writing in the morning, communing, and sort of thinking about just walking around and enjoying the grounds.
Well, it's a great place to walk. I do try to walk every day for an hour or so, whatever coast I'm on, wherever I am, just as a kind of exercise thing and an antidote to all the sitting that's required for writing, you know, so it gets me up and stretching. What better place could one find to just simply walk than the Tanglewood campus, which is a dream of a place. And I don't know if my reflections are very profound or not, but I can love the trees and the beautiful landscape that is here. I would recommend it to any walker.
We spoke to Ellen about, and getting back to the educational component of Tanglewood, but for you, of having an opportunity to work with these young musicians, it would seem, I mean, obviously you have wonderful career accomplishments, but it would seem that there would be great pride in that work as well.
Well, I don't do too much work with the students. I would love to have done more over the years, but I have always admired what they accomplish every year, and we see and feel the idealism that is in them that perhaps we all had as younger people and we hope we've kept alive throughout our working lives. They're fabulous. An analogy immediately springs to mind. We've seen all these magnificent Olympics on television, and whenever you could possibly, if you could ever possibly get down on the younger generation, to put it that way, you only need to look at the Olympians and see their dedication and their achievement and their commitment. And all of these qualities are seen in the faces and hands and lives of these young musicians that come here to study. It's a similar drive to do well, to accomplish, to contribute. And in many ways, it represents the best of us.
Is there a nostalgia? Can you look at them and say, I can see myself in these kids, in these young people?
I would love to be able to say that. I see these young people as being much better than I think I was ever at their age.
You are the most modest man I have ever met in my entire
life. I don't
know
about that, but I do believe it's true. I mean, these people are so accomplished and so young. And I think it's probably true. I mean, you can continue the analogy with the Olympics if you like. Probably 30 years ago or 40, the great athletes then could not have achieved what these kids are doing today. And I think it's true, it's similar in what we're seeing here. So it's not really modesty. I think it's, I believe it's a, it's an objective fact about the existence of progress when we historically think perhaps we're not really making it. But I think there may be still mutations that are going on that are positive. And these kids are so much farther ahead than we were, I believe.
I'm struck how an audience responds to you, and is because of your compositions and because of your great achievement. And I think of this in a sense of when you come here to Tanglewood or perform, that people come out en masse to hear you and to see you. But I was very struck. We had Stefan Deneuve, who will share the podium with you tonight in Tanglewood on Parade, and he was talking about his great admiration for you and the great welling of emotion that he has to get that chance to talk to you. Do you realize that, of the impact that you have on these great professionals who are here that are really the next generation?
Well, the impact on the professionals surprised me a little bit. And certainly it pleases me greatly. I think in terms of the audience reaction that you refer to, I think probably that it bespeaks a lot about the power of film and the fact that if a film is successful, billions of people can see it and hear the music and enjoy it and so on. So I think it can give the music an extra resonance with audiences that a piece written just for a concert setting may not be able to earn until many, many decades of repetition. Something like that may be a part of what you describe. But when artists like Stefan will admire anything that I've done, it does me a great honor to feel that, because initially the purpose of this music tonight, for example, we play music from Tintin or Tintin, which is a children's film. Mm. And music is meant to describe action in ways that perhaps children might relate to by the orchestra, and they see, as they see it. If it then becomes some music that could possibly interest a professional conductor, what a bonus, what a goal far beyond any of its original intention that would be. And when it can happen, of course, it thrills me greatly.
The audience for that and its use, of course, is for children, but there's nothing childlike about the musicality of that piece.
Well, I guess the other thing it causes me to respond by saying, isn't it amazing how many of these themes that six-year-olds can sing back to us that we immediately forget, and they will see the film once and hear the score once, and they'll remember the third associate theme for such and such a character.
Well, talk about pride. You have to be proud about that.
It is amazing. Yeah. I'm remembering my own children. I mean, they're all very musical, but I think it tells us something also about youth.
Hmm. I was listening to you at rehearsal just a moment ago, and doing Tintin. You're going to be doing that as well as Close Encounters tonight at Tanglewood on Parade. And it's interesting because it's a new piece, and watching you work with the orchestra is rather fascinating because it's rather new to them as well.
It is new to them. One of the pieces they hadn't seen, actually, we did some bowing this morning very quickly, changed some bowing, which improved things, I think, quite a bit. But the orchestra is so fabulous. I mean, we all know that. And they're also brilliant sight readers, as our people are in Los Angeles. We put things in front of them, and they master it after a glance. You know, this is something that represents a great professionalism.
What did you mean by change the bowing?
Well, if you would read one of your sentences from your script, you might read it with an accent on one conjunctive word, and then the next time you read it, you may want to change the accent slightly to reshape the way the sentence might fall or rise. And so there are great variations in the way you can play two or three notes on strings, you know, all in one stroke or three strokes to separate them, and the speed of the bow is an issue. And so these things can be decided. And actually, a bowing certainly can be changed from orchestra to orchestra or hall to hall. You get to one hall, it's less articulate, and you may have to bow it a little differently. In other words, you would slow your speech down and finish your final consonants a little more carefully. Something like this. It has to do with diction and issues of volume and so on.
I've just always wondered about when you're watching the orchestra and they're all going in the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
And you just wonder, how come nobody's going in the other direction?
Well, it's written on the page. They see it. It's above the notes, and they see which group of notes are played in each which stroke and so on. But these are issues that come up at rehearsal that we discuss, and they're particularly pertinent when the music is new. Because when we play the repertoire over the years, we've had all these issues are pretty much settled. There may be a few momentary things that might need changing. But this morning is a good example of reading a couple of things that they hadn't seen before and getting to these issues and deciding them and fixing them, so to speak, more or less immediately, as great professionals can do.
You seem to enjoy Close Encounters. You've done that several times here. I think is it something you enjoy performing?
I do. I love the film, particularly the second half of the film, I think, is from Magic Mountain, but it's not the right name for the mountain. Spielberg will scold me. But from that point on, I think I always say it's something more than just some celluloid frames. It seems to have a heart and a soul and a circulation. It's something he's put together editorially with his photographs that adds up at just being something quite almost human for me. The idea of, we've had a lot of films about connections between earthlings and visitors that we might expect. But I don't think it's ever been done more gently and beautifully and lyrically than he was able to do in Close Encounters. The creatures that arrived were beautiful and brilliant and friendly and helpful. So it becomes a hopeful experience, I guess, for us.
John Williams will conduct tonight during Tanglewood on Parade, and he'll be honored with an 80th birthday celebration on Saturday, August 18th at 8:30 in the Shed. You can go to tanglewood.org for more information, tanglewood.org. Maestro Williams, it is such an honor and such a treat to have you before our microphones.
Thank you. It is for me, too. I enjoyed being with you very much.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtables, live remote broadcast from Tanglewood on WAMC.